Welcome to In Other News, I'm Jeff Brady. Today we're going to go right into an interview with John Hutchison, Canadian inventor and experimental scientist. John has been working with field effects for more than three decades. The effects from these experiments are the result of interference zones. That is, the result of interfering several beams or fields of varying frequencies of electromagnetic energy in a target zone. Remember when Dr. Wood described how her student who worked in audio design said that if you locate speakers a certain way, you may end up with dead zones where the sound is canceled, or other zones where glass and china could be damaged? Well, Dr. Wood references this concept as the Hutchison effect. It is in fact a collection of phenomena that John Hutchison discovered in 1979 when he was making attempts to study the longitudinal waves of Nikola Tesla, as well as the work of others, such as Thomas Townsend Brouwer. Dr. Wood uses the Hutchison effect in her book, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11, to show what types of known extraordinary effects can result from electromagnetic interference. The Hutchison effect has similarities to other known technologies. We talk with John today about his work with using frequency generators to help clean up the Gulf of Mexico and his work helping to remove airborne radiation fallout from the Fukushima disaster. John Hutchison, welcome to the show.
Real pleasure to be on your show today.
Well, some listeners may not know who you are and the work that you've done. Can you just bring listeners up to date with the work that you're doing right now and how you got involved?
Well, I replicated the work of Nikola Tesla and others a long time ago, back in the 70s, and then it was caught by some scientists who came to visit me and then promoted it to the government of the United States. And what I'm doing is levitation at a distance, as well as transmutation of common metals to impossible alloys. So I was one of the first ones on the Star Wars program, where we gave demonstrations to Colonel John Alexander and Los Alamos National Labs, then on to the Canadian government, McDonnell Douglas and many others, and I brought it to Maine media by a demonstration on Canadian television. So, no degrees, just an interest in engineering and building old machines and that kind of thing, really.
Fantastic. And you grew up in Canada?
Oh, yeah. Born in Canada, mm-hmm. Vancouver. Lived in the mountainside of Canada, North Vancouver. And that's where I built one of my first big, giant laboratories was in North Vancouver. Access to many scrapyards and surplus dealers.
And it's one of the most beautiful places.
Oh, yeah. You're right in with nature.
The junk stores in Chinatown here in New York City had a lot of oscillators and that looked like it was pulled out of someone's laboratory. And that was back in the 60s here in New York. And I was just thinking to myself, gee, I wonder if that was from, you know, dismantled from Tesla's lab that was on Houston.
One would think maybe that's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Because so many things wind up in strange places, especially old machines. And I had access to a lot of electrical machinery.
Your work with Star Wars, and can you just bring listeners up to speed with the nature of your involvement and what Star Wars was? And at this time, were you a Canadian? Were you living in Canada?
Oh, yes. I was living in Canada and was held on Canadian soil. So the U.S. government came up to observe the effects we're doing. What Star Wars was, it's a program that Reagan wanted to set up a shield around the United States to stop incoming missiles and other threats. And it did progress for a number of years at Lawrence Livermore, Los Alamos, and many other national laboratories, where they had like a trillion-watt laser and other unique and wonderful things, even antimatter experiments. And they were interested in my case because it used little power and there was great effects created up to about 300 feet away. So they came with their own metal samples and video equipment for about 4 months to view what I was doing. They did capture a lot of stuff and of course, both governments. I can't seem to get the videos from them, but nevertheless, we had some very interesting effects happen. And I was told that the Soviet Union was doing something similar, and that it was important that they would understand what I'm doing for defense. And the agency at the time for the U.S. Pentagon was INSCOM, INSCOM. Bert Stubbledeen was head of that agency, and my business partners went to Washington, D.C., had a meeting with the generals there, and one general wanted to go and tell the president right away about it. The other general said, no, let's just go investigate this, make sure that's for real. So they came and investigated and wrote it up, and it sort of vanished into classified.
The material and work that you're doing now, and you can reproduce it, is considered classified information?
At the time, these visits were classified in the matter of national security, but now it's not. I can't still get the tapes, but I can talk about it, and I also do TV shows and invite Colonel Alexander on with me talking about it on TLC and Discovery Channel. I'm doing other things right now after many years of demonstrations and levitations for TV shows, scientists and that. Was working in the Gulf of Mexico, eliminating the oil corrected problem. And right now I'm doing a subtle reduction of radiation through machines in Minnesota.
We'll definitely get into that. It's absolutely fascinating area that and the way you've used your technology and breakthroughs for the greater good, in essence. But can you just go back a bit and explain the science to listeners a little bit about the creating a static field and then the interference zones from the static fields? And maybe is this a connection to what George Pigott was doing or other scientists?
I would say that, going into it is going into like producing certain RF radio waves, frequencies, and high electrostatics, creating standing columnar waves that are projected out at a great distance. It takes a lot of tuning, a lot of engineering to create these effects, and the effects are incredibly strong compared to the power input. They can take a 3-inch steel bar and turn it into a knot, basically, through the gelification of the metal. And I'm only working with 110 volts, maybe 50 amperes, household current doing this stuff. And it's been well documented by many different people. These effects seem to, I feel, tap into zero-point energy. And I can relate some of the articles that were accepted by the U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command was a report written by René Louis Vallée of France, the father of the neutron bomb, who did write up a report on what I was doing and the energy potential. It's about a 4-page document, and I do have that, I believe, on the Internet somewhere.
Has anyone been able to reproduce what you've done?
I think the closest people to understanding what I'm doing is probably Ken Shoulders and Dr. Elizabeth Ann Rauscher, who seem to have a grasp on what I'm doing. They're very well-noted scientists who are quite reclusive. And Ken Shoulders gave a exclusive interview with Nancy last year, and this was published on the Internet. So there's a few scientists that understand what I'm doing. As far as replication of it, it's a high probability in the black ops world. A friend of mine, Boyd Bushman of Lockheed Martin, brought it to a journalist's attention, Nick Cook of Jane's Defense Weekly.
Right.
That they were working on it, and we will make it fly. That's what their statements were. And there's a lot of other spooky stuff that people seem to know what I'm doing, but are kind of guarded because they don't want to lose their jobs. And it's been brought up in main media a number of times. Certain people go out on their limb to explain what I'm doing, but they are very cautious about it.
I just want to explain a little bit further for listeners. You're using very low input, household level, consumer level input to levitate metal tools, even to have water rise up. How heavy was that steel ball?
Oh, the famous steel ball. Mm-hmm. That had to have been anywhere from 70 to 80 pounds. I didn't weigh it, but different TV shows show it off and give it different weights. So it's around 80 pounds.
And you're in a separate room. That's in a particular chamber, right, where the interference zone is?
It was kind of in a storage area, and I was kind of crunched against the wall filming it. And I was scared, you know, like, what if this thing just takes off or whatever?
See, that's very interesting. Dr. Judy Wood mentioned that possibility where some kind of loop will be created and it will spin out of control, something like that.
Yeah. Actually, what happened in 2007 in New Westminster, British Columbia, was kind of like that. It affected many square miles of the city where the mayor got upset, who was a supporter of my work. But this really caused a lot of problems. And was brought to attention at Ken Shoulders as well, but it affected many square miles of the city, where people felt an instant kind of dizziness.
So yeah. you're really affecting the fabric of space and time?
One could say that. I mean, it brought in the fire marshal and orders to take all the equipment out and that the area is not zoned for this kind of stuff.
Remember Dr. Wood describing how the debris and surrounding area, Ground Zero, here in New York City, continue to deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were also concerned about?
In metals?
Even after you shut everything down, the process mm-hmm. still continued to deteriorate in the metals and surrounding area.
I had certain metals that were analyzed by the Max Planck Institute that kept on aging and falling apart, turning into rust.
Have you figured that part out yet?
Oh, I think Ken Shoulders has, and other scientists, because the entire atomic structure is re-altered, and it's probably exotic vacuum objects that are at play disintegrating all this stuff. There was a paper presented to MIT University by Ken Shoulders on my work in about 2005, where he goes into details on this kind of stuff. Really well done presentation.
Of course, a lot of people are thinking, this technology exists. Why aren't we scaling this up or into an area where everyone's got like a little box next to their house and they just flip a switch and there's free energy, drawing energy from the ambient, processing it into above unity and everyone's happy? Can you describe why that hasn't happened and the involvement of the black ops in conjunction?
Oh, my goodness. Well, yes. I mean, this technology has been around for a long, long time. I've demonstrated in Japan these free energy machines, portable small ones. I built them, demonstrated them to many people, gave the machines away as gifts, got funding for building the machines. We were going to do a reality TV show on actually building a self-powering house, but I'm scratching my head. Well, gee, you know, is everybody not interested in this, but only a few people?
Mm-hmm.
Even Dr. Franklin E. Meade's zero-point energy collector, which was a groundbreaking event, accepted by the U.S. Patent Office in 1996, has great promise as a whole new energy source, but nothing going on with it. It's just, I find it very strange. So what I did was outsource it onto the internet and to kids and to actress friends and actor friends, and they're building these things and publishing the results all over the internet on YouTube.
John, can you describe a little more in detail exactly what these power cells are? How do they work? How did you build them? What do they look like? How much power do they offer?
Oh, the little power cells are built out of common minerals and are charged with electricity. And what they do is they collect background radiation on the very high end of the electromagnetic spectrum, and it's called zero-point energy or the Casimir effect. And this energy potential, estimated by Richard P. Feynman and other Nobel Prize scientists, give the equivalent of a cubic foot of the material could power the Earth energy needs for 100 years. So what the little power cells do is just only capture basically a drop out of the ocean of this energy, converts it into usable power. So the power cells will light a LED, and if you put them in series and parallel like batteries, then, of course, you get more power. So this is going on now on YouTube because I just simply outsourced it to the world, basically, and I will be working on one that will power a cell phone the size of a brick, but an actress friend of mine will use it to demonstrate it in Hollywood to other entertainers who will then broadcast it out more. But there is some kind of a blockage of this stuff. Now, I know that Black Ops has all this stuff, and I was informed by phone calls that they have it, and I have diagrams of some of them as well. But why it's not in the public domain, I don't know. Maybe because Big Oil just don't want it out there.
We talked about this earlier. It's not only a neutral stance, but moved into the negative where they're stunting any movement and really they're killing people who figure things out. Did that ever bother you? Because we talked about Eugene Malov and others who have been strangely murdered. Is that something to be concerned about, or are these coincidences?
There could be coincidences. I never have any problems myself. I mean, I would carry these free energy machines across the border. U.S. Customs would have a great time looking at them. I brought them into Japan, same as the customs over there. It's been broadcast on main media lots of times. I never had any problems. I just had a lot of positive feedback.
And you've actually had positive feedback from the military, various branches.
Oh, yeah. NASA wanted to work with me, Kennedy Space Center people, a couple of years ago, and as well as the U.S. Pentagon wanted to set up a lab for me and for me to go to work again. I won't mention names, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but I have their emails, and I keep in contact with them, I like to be kind of free, and doing television shows can pay amazing amounts of money. I can make $20,000 in one day if I'm doing a show. It goes to my producer who sells video footage. Just finished up one called Thrive, Thrive, and another one called True TV, with Jesse Ventura will be airing in January.
I can't wait to see that one.
Oh, yeah. Thrive bought some footage from Griffin Film Productions, so Peter owes me some money there. So he sells my footage at $75 per second. Yeah, no kidding. NBC bought up like thousands of dollars. Japanese TV bought up $20,000 in footage one day. So that, to me, is fun instead of working in some lab kind of thing, really. Plus, I have other interests besides electronics and old engineering. I like doing machine tool work and gunsmithing and that kind of stuff, plus having adventures.
You bet. And your adventures, this other work to help clean the environment as in the wake of these horrifying disasters. And Can we talk about the system that you designed to help clean the core exit out of the Gulf of Mexico? It was based on frequency. Anyone really not familiar with this technology would look at it and go, "You're out of your mind. What are you doing?"
Oh, that's what I thought, too. But no, Nancy is a gifted lady, and she rescued me from Vancouver.
That's your wife?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We set off to the Gulf in a pickup truck and a trailer that she borrowed from friends with this equipment in it, and we set up down in Louisiana. I was very skeptical, you know, that she's taking measurements. We did experiments in Vancouver first before we did leave. That was confirmed by other scientists. So I went down there and started doing these tests and experiments, and the samples were before and after tests done, and it showed an amazing reduction in oil pollution. So we tried it again, the same thing over and over again, so I thought, okay, I must be tying into something, and we had a lot of support from different scientists as well.
While you were down there in the Gulf?
Mm-hmm.
And also the military, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, a good friend at CNAV came down with very interested in what we're doing and gave us some good reports and information on ELF radio waves, DNA and healing with ELF radio waves, that kind of thing. So we had some media support as well. Walter, who was filming everything, local news was down there several times. Some actors, friends of mine, and other friends came down for support. So all in all, it was quite amazing.
Can you describe to listeners what it is that you actually did? What types of frequency that you sent into the water, and what did that do on the atomic or molecular level?
Oh, wow. That's going to be a cool one. Nancy developed a set of tones that she transmits by audio. And what I do is I take about 20 different signal generators and RF amplifiers, and I put into them what they call external modulation from the actual wires going to the speakers. And what I do is I transmit this at ultra-low frequency and also at the hydrogen band, which is 1420 kilomegahertz. So we're getting this amazing broadcast of stuff coming out into the ocean. And there was actually people that monitor the weather picked up what they call harp rings or something like that around us. Something they noticed and made contact to us, invited us to come up to St. Louis where they did some testing.
The person who saw the harp rings or the concentric rings in that area is a person who goes by the YouTube handle Dutch Sense, who's really rocketed to popularity by monitoring these anomalies, these radar anomalies, and among many other things. And he's also interested in the radiation. But please continue, John.
Oh, yeah. He took a lot of videos of what we're doing. But also, we had the local constabulary show up saying, you've got to turn all this stuff down somehow because we're picking it up in houses. And sure enough, there was a YouTube video done on some strange sounds in Florida that had people kind of wondering what it was. And I kind of laughed at it. I thought, wow, really, transverse waves. This is kind of cool. So the police came down to East Point, Florida, requesting we turn this down. And now East Point, Florida is a very isolated area that we were at. Sportsman's Lodge, Bob Allen, our host, and others, were broadcasting right off the point. So how could it go into a house? There's no houses around, really. Except maybe a couple of miles away, but...
An anomalous transference of energy?
Mm-hmm.
No one's certain that the sound waves were affecting that remote area.
Well, the police were quite upset over it.
But once you stopped, it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, gotcha.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Even as we speak, Nancy has the machines running here, and I can hear it on the telephone line a little bit.
I would imagine there would be harmonic resonance within the electrical fields, and any kind of electricity would somehow be affected, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I can hear it now, too. I don't know if you can hear it. But.
I can't. You have a really quiet, high-quality landline. But I wanted to ask you about how you were able to measure the cleanup of that particular region of the water, the cleanup of core exit. How did you measure it? Was it a spectrometer?
It was actually a team of scientists that take before and after samples, and it was Mobile, Alabama, where the test samples were analyzed for free, actually. He donated a lot of his time. Another scientist measured them also. It was videotaped extensively as well. It shows the actual effects of the water going into standing wave formations, witnesses and observers, and I would say it's pretty impressive. And on-site visitors would mention this and film it as well. So you can see the transformation over, especially Indian Creek, over about a month's time, from heavy pollution, really heavy pollution, to many, many new life forms being formed right in the creek. So that was extensively kind of a control experiment.
That's really good to know. Something positive is happening, and it's impressive you had the support of scientists and others around you, and they don't look at the process as crazy, and it seems like people are becoming open-minded, more open-minded about unconventional approaches to science.
Well, yeah, it was very, very inspiring that way, although Nancy contacted BP's executives, but they said they already evaluated the technology by looking at a YouTube video, and they didn't want to participate, really. So there are a lot of characters that didn't come down to the Gulf of Mexico or just sort of fluffed it off, kind of like, well, you know, just whatever, crazy people, you know.
The other area I wanted to get in before we go to calls, your work in the cleanup of the radiation.
Mm-hmm. We're broadcasting on certain, basically, geomagnetic lines of force, and I'm going into the hydrogen band, and we're getting a reduction in radiation here, which I noticed in previous experiments I did a long time ago with people that were very interested in what I was doing. And we're broadcasting out here and getting a reduction in radiation. And eventually, we'll be doing this on the West Coast. Understanding what radiation is and what it can possibly convert into. Again, I'm using the hydrogen band ELF, which is the same kind of energies I used in the Gulf of Mexico. And results are interesting. It's been a significant drop in radiation. It's been monitored by Nancy's friends down in the Twin Cities, who are into politics and that kind of thing, environmental issues.
Right. And just so listeners know, John is apolitical. He maintains a neutral stance on a lot of these political issues, I suspect, to maintain a focus and not be so distracted.
Basically, yes. As I said, mentioned before, I got other projects I'm doing. I'm building a cannon right now, which is kind of fun. Got to keep busy.
Oh, the conventional weaponry?
Yep. Big old black powder cannon. I'm into antique firearms and machine tools, so that's my main interest. But I guess you'd say I'm quite versatile.
John Hutchison, we're going to take a break right now, and we're going to open the lines for phone calls. Are you ready to take calls?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, callers, if you have a question or comment for John, please call us at 212-209-2900. And we'll be right back after this break. And you're listening to In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest is Canadian inventor John Hutchison, and we're going to go to phone calls. John, you ready?
Absolutely, for sure.
Fantastic. And we're going to go to Ed in Queens, I believe. Ed, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, Jeff?
Good.
Yeah, how you doing, Mr. Hutchison? We met a long, long time ago. I don't know if you remember. I was in the military during the Reagan administration. And I was a lower private involved with monitoring and bringing some of the equipment for some of your work. You know, it was really impressive to see some of the demonstrations and some of the videos. And a lot of people are still big supporters of you on the down low.
Ed, how long ago was this?
This was back in the 80s. I can't really say too much because some things are signed. And that won't allow me to really get too deep, but it was back in the 80s. It was in the 80s.
Right.
And basically, I've even tinkered with some, as an amateur scientist, with some of your stuff on the internet and some of the stuff I remember. And some of it does work. I even built a small generator to charge a cell phone with the ether and some of the transmitters and diodes that I think it was your design. It's a circuit that you can build and use a wire, and it has like two transistors and two triac diodes, and it actually pulls energy from the air. The only thing that concerns me is, you know, I know you're apolitical, but a lot of your work has the potential, because it's more art than science, a lot of it, and it has the potential to really spiral out of control, because a lot of your stuff, I believe, is basically fooling around with the fundamental construction of the universe. If you even sign on to superstring theory and vibrations and harmonics, some of the stuff you do, man, is really fascinating, but it also has the potential to be really scary. I just wanted to hear your comment on that, and how do you deal with that as far as being a scientist and being an adventurer, but also, you know, the possibility that you could cause a catastrophic event?
Well, during the experiments, a catastrophic event?
Yeah. I mean, even in Canada, your some of the stuff that you were doing had effects for miles around.
That's
there
right.
Was levitations in people's houses. There was metal exploding. There were beams that actually melted.
That's very true. Yep.
Yeah.
At New Westminster, British Columbia.
Yeah.
The mayor, of course, got quite upset over that.
Yeah. I mean, can you blame
him? Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was stuff happening. Stuff that no disrespect, but stuff that I don't even think, by some of your expressions, you even expected to happen.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yep. That did happen.
And like you even said, some of your work was more art than science because it was trial and error. And a lot of that machinery that you used at that time was very powerful, and it generated very exotic and strange fields. And when you cross those fields, and even if you sign on to superstring theory, that the whole universe is basically just made of oscillating vibrations of matter, what you're doing could actually punch a hole in the space-time continuum.
High probability. It was a concern of the U.S. government scientists way back in 1983.
It still is.
Okay. Gotcha.
It still is.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Thank you for your call. And
yeah.
You were there in the 80s, right?
Yep.
With John.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Wow.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, first of all, I'd just like to congratulate you and your wife for making such a great team. That's amazing. A professional team and a marriage, that's not bad at all.
Oh, thank you.
And second thing is, so when you went to the Gulf and you did what you did as far as the environment, the conditions of the water is concerned, and radiation. What happens, because once you clean up, however you clean up, you create a waste product. So where does that waste go? Whether you get rid of it or whatever you do to it, where does it go? It has to go somewhere. Where does it go?
I would agree, and I think it might just turn into carbon. We noticed large deposits of carbon laying on the floor of the ocean. Well, not the floor of the ocean, I mean several feet down, looked like carbon. Other scientists have other opinions, but that's just what I observed personally. They appear to be carbon particles, which then are basically harmless, like charcoal, but again, there's other scientists that have written up reports on it and published it, and I believe I took those results and published them on a program, a website called SlideShare.
Okay, John. Thank you, caller, for that question. We're going to go to another call. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, I was interested also in what this gentleman was saying. What if you know it turns into carbon, you know that's safe. But look at the good you could do. And I also wanted to know, you just mentioned a website and you didn't spell it out, how we could know what scientists think happens, whether it's carbon or not. And then I had one other question.
Mm-hmm.
You'll repeat what you said before, SlideCo or something.
Oh, sorry. SlideShare.
Slide what?
SlideShare, www.slideshare.com or .net.
Okay, now let me, .net, after you write SlideShare, right?
Share, SlideShare.
SlideShare. It allows you to upload scientific reports and PDF files.
What I wanted to know is, how connected to Tesla is your work? Did you actually have papers that connected to some of his work that you then continued up there in Canada?
Well, I got interested in Tesla through being a historian. I got interested and rebuilt most of his laboratory with the help of a lot of scrap dealers in Vancouver.
Can one see that? Do you have a record of that?
It's all notarized by the scientists and news media.
I think you ought to continue if you say it can dissolve those terrible particles in the Gulf, as well as the way you say people are buying this. I think that's good. But I wish you wouldn't do your cannons. You remind me of my great hero, Descartes. And when he did all the trajectories of the weaponry, I lost my love of his character. But I don't want to do that with you, because you sound like you don't really want to use them for war making. You're interested from a scientific point of view.
Well, basically, no, I'm into machine tools and cannons, you know.
Well, I like that. But instead of the ball of steel, you can have balls of the other things you make. And just think of the good you could do, and Hutchinson will be known the way Descartes was known. Wouldn't you love that?
Well, you know, I'm just a human being, just like
well,
you.
He is just a human being, but I want to see your stuff do good, and it's fascinating, and thank you.
Oh, thank you very kindly.
Thank you, caller. And we'll go to another call. Hi, you're on the air with John Hutchinson.
How you doing? Is that me?
Yes, it is.
Yes, hi. It's a great show, great topic, and obviously an interesting guest. Let me ask you, don't you think it's just a shame that so many more of us aren't doing all kinds of stuff like this? You know, we're living such mundane existences when we just have the potential to do all of it, whatever all of it means, you know, right?
Your creative talents, your creative drive that you want to do.
Once I started reinventing the wheel, that's an expression, but I'm not using it as an expression. I did reinvent the wheel, and then I realized there were many different aspects of it to go into, and I keep getting caught up in this new revolution, let's put it that way, over and over, and I think of new aspects of it, new applications, new ways to dole it out as it gets invented, as it reinvents itself. It's almost like its own wheel. And I know that sounds a little prophetic, but...
Well, John, what do you think about that? Why do you think there aren't as many people maybe going in the direction that you are?
And can I just jump in and insert one more thing? I'm curious to know, do you do anything... do you think that your work has a substantially better answer for sewage treatment plants? Because when they dump this stuff in our harbors, it just changes everything. And they're not handling what they're supposed to be handling that we're counting on them to handle.
Okay, great question.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good questions. And I think that these technologies can be used to do a lot of waste management control.
Great.
And, yeah.
I think
also that people are dumbed down and are kept too busy, you know. They're just trying to survive, and they go to work, and they come back home and watch TV.
Oh, I was grinding dreamers. I know you know what a dreamer is, a drill reamer. So I was within 2/10 all day, and I know you can appreciate that. Once you get it set up, you just watch it and it's easy. But if it gets away from you, then you got to get back at it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I also wanted to say, I'm sorry, I'm losing my train a little, but I'm still right here with you. Yes to the way, I'm sorry, it's not fair. I'm losing my train, what else I wanted to mention, and I'm not going to hold you up. So I'll yield. Thank you. I'm a scale model maker, machinist, tool maker. My name is Brad. I'd like to look at your work. Would I look to SlideShare?
Mm-hmm.
Is that where I would look for your... Okay, great.
My SlideShare and my YouTube channel, John K. Hutchison 1. I have lots of videos.
John K., did you say?
Yeah, John K. Hutchison 1.
John, that's what I wanted to say. My brother is in touch with someone here on Long Island in New York that's has a new, very, very, extremely simple invention that he has put together and is proving in Northport, in the Northport area, for sewage treatment, and is absolutely almost cost-free and works like crazy. So let's hope it just goes over. And, you know, I know it's hard because there are powers that be that won't have their things changed and will put a lot of power, energy, money into stopping people like us.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
But I'm going to get busy growing wheels and other things.
Cool.
Okay, I'm done, and I really appreciate your time, and whatever this is you're doing, it really looks interesting. I want to look at it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a great evening.
You too.
Well, there you go. Thank you, caller. If you want to get in touch with John Hutchison through email, email me at inothernewsradio@yahoo.com, and I'll forward them. John, yes, that is the other element here, and that is using the technology, of course, the sound frequency in the water for sewage, but also it's too early to start experimenting with evaporating debris in landfills with some of the interference technology. But yeah, we shall see what happens. Hopefully people band together and start working on this together.
We're hello?
Go ahead, caller.
Yes. Hello, John. I've seen you and some of your work in Judy Wood's book, and this is very interesting to me. I read Tesla's Life years ago, Man Out of Time, I believe, was the name of the book. And the
Margaret.
Question I want to ask you is, is this technology, do you know of any modifications of it, of a directed free energy to use in crowd control? Because I kind of envision that as something the authorities would like to get into.
No, they're already into crowd control. It's called non-lethal weapon technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's around for a number of years. My former partner, John Alexander, is into non-lethal weapon technology. So,
but I would also think that if you could disintegrate steel, you could disintegrate people en masse, which is not a very pleasant idea.
No, I only know of emails I used to get from Iraq. People accusing me of somebody using technology to vaporize buses and people. But again, I don't know. I mean,
okay. Well, anyway, I'll try. I'm not online, so I can't follow your website. But her book, Where Did the Towers Go, is very important. My uncle John was working for Otis Elevator and installed the elevator systems in the two towers. So I'm kind of connected to it. Besides being very interested in where things are really going.
Oh, I had friends and fans I lost in the Twin Towers as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't lose any relatives, but like I say, my uncle helped build the elevators. That anyway, I won't get into it now because you obviously want to take this somewhere else. But thank you for answering my question.
Oh, pleasure, sir.
Have a good night.
Thank you, caller. Appreciate that. If you have a question or comment for our guest John Hutchison, please call us at 212 1-800-209-2900. And we have another call. Hi, you're on the air, sir.
Hi, Mr. Brady.
Good evening.
Hi, great show. I love your show. Great guest. I have a perfect follow-up. Actually, a couple of comments. Quick question. People vaporizing, what do you know about the Philadelphia experiment, and was Tesla involved in that? The second thing is, Mr. Brady and I have talked about this, is the government controlled by aliens? Is there technology that we're getting from a race of beings that might not maybe have the best interests of the human race? I don't know if you could say that if you work for the government, but this seems almost out of this world. That and could Tesla or other people have been actual? And also the Florida thing, what do you think of Edward Leachscan's thing, and how was he able to build the Coral Castle?
Okay, that's a lot of material. Let's start from the beginning. Go ahead, John.
Okay.
Sure thing. Let's see. The first question was, again, about the
Philadelphia.
Where people
I was doing a miniature version of that in 2006. We were going to do a network television show, and our first prime show was the Philadelphia experiment, and I did get results on a small 1 foot long Navy destroyer and a tub of water, which I filmed extensively, and some of it's on the internet and a lot of it is not yet on the internet, but it was successful, so which led us to go into 13 episodes covering Philadelphia experiment and then time travel and all kinds of cool stuff that kids would really love it. The young generation really would really like it. So, but again, Hollywood, you know, they always say something and sometimes you hear back from them, sometimes you don't. Just one
right,
of those.
Well, was that a Hollywood story, or really people were transported into the future? Some people welded against the metal, and the experiment went awry, and Tesla was involved in this?
No, Tesla, I don't know if he was involved in that. Of course, that was 1940s, I believe, and Tesla would have been very old or passed away already. So,
well, it was in 43, but okay.
Yeah, Einstein was apparently involved in it, plus other groups of people. It's still a big mystery. A lot of controversy around it. But I had fun doing my own little Philadelphia experiment in my apartment, which it worked. And it's on the internet somewhere, some of the footage.
Right.
All right.
Government technology from aliens.
There you go.
The super race of beings that are possibly giving us a lot of technology.
I have no idea on that issue with the aliens. A lot of people say the aliens give out technology. I don't know. I'm starting to wonder about, you know, politicians around the world, how crazy they act. And to me, it's like some kind of strange behavior pattern. But I don't know about aliens.
Edward Leachscan's Coral Castle, how was he able to levitate some of these huge ton bricks that,
Really, really cool history there. I get a lot of emails about that. And he was into radio physics as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. There's a small museum of him and his radio gear, and it's only bits and pieces of it, but I recognize the components. And it would have been 4-pin triode vacuum tubes he was using at the time, plus certain generators and that kind of thing. But other than that, it's under debate, and nobody really knows. But there are case histories of people levitating things with their mind, and that actually is in McDonnell Douglas' group of scientists that explore all that area.
Caller, thank you very much for those calls. In Dr. Wood's book, she writes about the Coral Castle. It's estimated that 1,000 tons of coral rock were used in the construction of the walls and towers. And he raised an obelisk that weighed 28 tons. And this guy wasn't a very big person either. He was not very tall, just medium built. Incredible. We got another call. Hi, you're on the air with John Hutchison.
great show as usual, Jeff. Thanks. A question, Mr. Hutchison. What are the Russians or Chinese doing about this type of stuff over the years?
Oh, okay, the Russians, when I was working with U.S. government folks, they indicated that they felt that the Russians were doing something similar to me, so my cooperation and working with the U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command people was very, very important. So the Soviets are quite ahead in Teslan kind of technology. Chinese folks, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
In the history of our country, these things always seem to wind up into god-awful weapons. Anything you can tell us about, I mean, I can't imagine Dick Cheney looking for a benevolent use of this, if you will.
Dick Cheney, what was the other? Donald Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld, too.
Those might work as well. I don't know if Dick, well, they probably all do, but yeah, some of these guys are kind of creepy, you know what I mean?
On a good day. What would Tesla be doing right now with this stuff? I mean, I remember I'm reading when Morgan turned him down when he said that the energy was for free.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if I'm an oil guy or these other criminals, if you will, with these gas frackers, man, I wish we had 10 bodyguards around you at this point, because they're not going to like this.
Just don't entertain negative energy. That's what I think.
Okay.
Just treat people with positive energy, and everything's cool. I've never had any problems with anybody, really.
Well, thank you for your work.
In government one time or twice, but...
Oh, really, John?
Good work, sir. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, caller. Thank you very much. So you've had a little bit of trouble, but essentially, I guess, you're saying be positive, and the interaction with maybe these oil corporations or natural gas corporations, make it a positive experience, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've met so many different people from all walks of life, and I always like to respond in a positive fashion, and people basically are all human, you know, whoever they are, and they like positive stuff and happy things. Negative stuff, I don't know, some people get locked into it, but as I said, some of my biggest fan owns their own country.
Very.
Well,
I got you. Okay, we got a caller on the line. Hi, caller, go ahead.
Yes, I'm curious. Are you able to give an overview of what you are talking about, what you do, and along with contact information before you close?
Oh, me?
Yes, an overview. You know, like a 30-second, 45-second overview of what you are saying that you're doing or can do, along with contact information. Thank you.
Well, luckily, I get a lot of daily requests for information, overviews, and that kind of thing. So what I've done is put everything, for a number of years on the Internet. So I have all kinds of different things on YouTube, my YouTube channel. I don't like to brag about myself too much. And I don't know, how do you do an overview on yourself in 30 seconds or less? I don't know.
Okay, we got another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Good evening. I'm very interested in this conversation.
Hello?
Hello? What happened? We lost him?
We lost the caller, I think.
We lost the caller. Caller, if you want to call back, 212-209-2900 to talk with our guest, John Hutchison. We got about 4 minutes to go this evening. And if you have a question or comment and we're off the air, you can email the show at inothernewsradio@yahoo.com, and I'll forward it to John Hutchison. We got another caller. Hi, you're on the air?
Yes. Hi, John. My name is Steve. In your technology, have you done any experimentation at all to act as a counter to some of these extremely dangerous microorganisms that are out there, especially when one thinks that one of the greatest threats to the world is a pandemic? If you've done anything along those lines to counter even an anthrax attack or something like that?
Good question. I know the frequencies are used for healing, yes. There's a lot of papers on this kind of, on this area in electrotherapeutics. And a pandemic, I'm sure, could be handled through some type of RF intervention. I'm guessing at that, you know, right now.
Right. But you've not done any direct experimentation yourself?
No.
Do you have any plans?
Say, pardon?
Do you have any plans for the future of looking into that in more depth? I mean, you have such a phenomenal mind and how it works and some of these things that you've created do an awful lot of good for mankind.
I'm interested in DNA healing, and life extension is another one of my hobbies I've been doing for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
Inspired by Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw. And now I understand that aging is through the process of telomeres shrinking and telomerase. So I'm interested in life extension and good health, as well as thinking about how to stop diseases. And some of the actual remedies are very simplistic in diet and that kind of thing, but advanced science, it all falls into enzymes and proteins.
Right. Well, it certainly seems, I mean, I was pretty blown away by the CDC report that just in our healthcare system alone in the United States, that over 1.2 million people annually contract hospital-acquired infection. And of that number, approximately 130,000, 140,000 of them come through hospital-acquired infection. And right now, the only counters they have to it are pretty severe chemicals to be used in cleaning and disinfecting that I think probably at the end result do more harm than they do good, you know, encountering things like this.
I agree with you on that. I studied certain tribes over in different countries that live to be 150 years old, and their diets are rather simplistic, no stress.
No
They're
stress.
Especially active till 100 or 120 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
I've
been studying
phenomenal.
That last couple of years now.
Right. Well, just to see, maybe a little food for thought. And I thank you very much for your efforts and everything that you're doing that seems to be having a tremendous impact in a positive way on mankind. It's very cool. And keep on doing what you're doing. And by all means, stay diversified and keep building your cannon. That's cool, too. I like to hear the big booms once in a while on the 4th of July as well.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. All right, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
For real.
You got to have fun sometimes, John, you know.
Oh, you always got to have fun.
Well, listen, we've run out of time, John, and I just want to say thank you. And that last caller really discussed and had a great question about frequency and disease, airborne disease, and things like that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to have you back on, and maybe back on with your wife as well, because she's just as amazing, and you guys are the dynamic duo now.
Well, thank you. Well, we are. And Nancy would be very happy to be on your show.
Fantastic. John Hutchison, Canadian inventor and experimental scientist, thank you so much for being